Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
And thank you, man, with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here on this Tuesday, March the 22nd, 2022, 3:22:22, 15 minutes past the hour. Rainy now here in Marion, but we'll make the best of this first Tuesday of spring. We've got a great program for you here this morning on WWGH Radio. Do want to remind you that today from 2:15 until 3 p.m., we've got the Adam the Computer Guy show. And then from 4:10 to 5 p.m., Voice of a People with Linda Sims. So don't miss that. And coming up in hour number two this morning, we've got a great guest on the program. Of course, I'm sure you remember the nationally syndicated Judge Joe Brown show. Judge Brown has been on with us many times. It's been a while since he's been on, though, maybe late last summer. And he's going to be on this morning in hour number two to discuss all kinds of interesting things like the cancellation of the syndicated series Maury Povich after 31 years. Judge Jerry, that's Jerry Springer, is also gone after a period of time, I think 3 years. We'll discuss the Ukraine and also the Supreme Court confirmation hearing of Ketanji Brown Jackson. So Judge Joe Brown coming up next hour. But this hour, we're going to have a lot of fun because we have a Marion native on who is doing great things, and we always love to check in with Marion natives who are doing great things. He is a 2013 Harding High School graduate, the son of Eric and Darlene Davis of Marion here, and doing some very, very impressive things in the music industry that we will learn about here this morning on the program. He is Dylan Davis. Dylan, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. How are you guys?
Doing well here. A little rainy today, but, you know, it's March in Ohio. We've still got another month.
Well, it's March in Louisiana, and it's raining here as well. And also, our street water main broke last night, so there's a giant flood in the middle of my street. So we're dealing with the same weather.
you've got it worse than we do right now.
Yeah, unfortunately, but well.
Now, living in Ohio and living in Louisiana, there obviously are some differences. What are the stark differences that would jump out to somebody living in Marion?
Well, I think the biggest difference, anybody in Ohio and in the Midwest knows that we're going to have crazy winters, you know, from December through February or sometimes even in March, you know, it's going to be bitter cold and snowy. Here, it doesn't really get like that. The summers are, I mean, it's just brutally humid and hot down here for a lot of months of the year. And that's probably the biggest difference, you know. Louisiana is known as being kind of like a swampy state, and it lives up to that reputation, I can promise you. That was the biggest thing I had to get used to moving down here was all the humidity and also, I mean, when you come down here in August and September, being so close to hurricanes is something that I was not used to. So we don't have to deal with that up in Ohio.
With all the hubbub that went on years ago with Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, Louisiana, is it coming back? Is Louisiana, New Orleans area back to being the tourist attraction that it once was?
Well, in Shreveport, I'm not actually very close to New Orleans, but, you know, everybody in this state kind of, that's their main attraction, that and LSU football. You know, LSU football down here is kind of the same as what Ohio State football is in our great state. But, you know, COVID did a number on it as well. I mean, I'm sure everybody everywhere has had similar effects to what went on from March 2020 through to now. But, yeah, I mean, New Orleans is the main attraction. Yeah, it's funny, you go into East Texas up here. I'm in the northwestern part of the state. And obviously, New Orleans is clear down in the southeastern part of the state. And you go across the border from Texas into Louisiana, and that's all they feature is stuff about New Orleans and stuff. That's their main attraction. So I would say so.
Being somebody who is a young performer like yourself who gets up in front of people, what has COVID done to you the last couple of years?
Oh, it's been tough. COVID made a lot of changes in the performance industry. You know, because when this all started, you know, we just knew so little about it. If I'm sure everybody remembers how scary March, April, and May, you know, those first few months of 2020 were. And basically, most opera companies around the country shut their doors. You know, I had a gig planned to go out to Colorado that summer, and it had to be postponed because they just didn't know. You know, nobody knew anything. Nobody knew anything. We didn't have, you know, any kind of medicine or treatments for it at that time. And yeah, you know, the performance industry, obviously singing and playing instruments involves moving air out of one's body to do so. And, you know, it became a very, very hard thing to manage. And a lot of friends of mine, changed career paths because of, you know, the effects of COVID and companies shutting their doors and losing jobs and losing work. And so it's a blessing that that I'm able to be still following this career path today.
When you don't work for a while for an unexpected situation like COVID in front of people, does it affect your performance? Do you get rusty?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think so. I'm down in Shreveport, Louisiana. I've been working for the opera company here for 2 years. And the first year, they opened their doors and we had a season, but we didn't do very much. You know, we were singing like in people's backyard, in people's driveways, on their front porches, for audiences of sometimes like anywhere from 20 people all the way down to like 5 people. I mean, we would just sing for anybody that we could. But sometimes the performances were very scattered and far between. And yeah, I think you lose a little touch with you know, how to present yourself in front of an audience. And it takes a little bit of time to kind of get that back up, because it's just there's something different about getting up on stage in front of people and with an orchestra and with everything else going on, you know, the lights and the costumes, that, you know, takes some preparation and getting used to. And when you spend some time away from that, I'm sure it's the same for anybody. You know, like if you're a professional athlete, you know, a football player, if a quarterback spends a year and a half recovering from a shoulder surgery or something, you know, they're not going to be the same guy as they were, you know, coming off of a playoff run, or, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Let's get a little background here for people who are not aware of you. 2013 graduate of Harding High School, as I said in the introduction. Mm-hmm. Tell us about growing up in Marion and how this career all evolved.
Well, it's funny. When I was a kid, you know, my dad was a longtime sports editor at Marion Star in Marion, Ohio, and you know, when I was a kid, he used to take me, you know, I remember back in the days when Tim Hinton was the head coach at Marion Harding football. We used to go to a lot of the playoff games and a lot of the big-time moments that he created for Marion folks. And I remember being like, oh, man, I want to be a Harding president football player. So that was my focus for so long. You know, then when I got into high school, I had some injury problems, and the football program wasn't doing as well then as it was, you know, back in when I was a kid. And I kind of transitioned to theater. The wonderful Jamie Rollins, who is now in charge of the music program at Marion Harding High School and has been for, I think, since like my sophomore year of high school. She started running things, and No, I wanted to be involved in the choirs and the small ensembles and the musicals, you know, and I don't know, it was just such a loving community after kind of a bad breakup with the sports program. There were these wonderful creative people that kind of welcomed me with open arms, and it was, I don't know, I had a moment on stage in a couple shows where I was like, man, this is something that I want to actually pursue because this is really fun.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of performers talk about being shy children, not unhappy, but just shy, more reserved than outgoing. Was that the case with yourself?
That's a very interesting question. And it actually, I've thought a lot about that before because, you know, now I'm this big outgoing personality, you know, any show that I'm in, any company I work for, there's like, I'm the one that walks around and like talks to everybody. And I'm like, you know, this is going to be a great show today. But it is interesting. When I was younger, I think there are a lot of people that would consider me to have been a very shy kid. And I think that theater and music and art were what my true passion were. And that's what helped me kind of develop my confidence, you know, within, you know, the realm of like community engagement and talking to people and just relating, you know what I mean? Like it's when everybody finds their niche, the thing that they're good at, I think that it helps them develop some of those skills. But yeah, I would say it's true. Just as a broad question, I think a lot of performers were very shy for a long time and had trouble being a part of a community. And then when they found that particular thing in their life, they realized, wow, why haven't I been doing this since I was like a little kid, you know?
You know, that's an interesting point to make because you obviously wanted to be a sports star or at least wanted to be in the sports field. Some injuries took you out of that. Do you ever think, well, if I hadn't been injured, where would I have ended up?
Yeah, I think about a lot of things about that. I think about that. I think about if I had trained a little bit harder. You know, I think that back then my mindset wasn't clear enough on what was required to be a sports star. And it's interesting how much I'm still a massive sports fan. I love Ohio State football, Ohio State basketball, even though they kind of disappointed us the other day, but oh well. I love a lot of the pro sports teams in Ohio, and I equate a lot of what I do as a singer to athletics because of how, you know, how much I love both of them. And being a singer, in a lot of ways, you are an athlete. You know, your voice requires a lot of, you use a lot of muscles. You're keeping your health, your voice healthy and you know, practicing and working out those muscles and keeping them engaged is very important. And, you know, I think about, like, the amount of practice and training and working and coachings and rehearsals that I do to, you know, be at the top of my craft every single day and, you know, be the best that I can possibly be as a performer and singer. I think, man, if I would have applied that to sports when I was a kid, maybe I could have, you know, played college football somewhere or something like that. I could have, you know, could have been a part of something great in that regard. But you never know. You know, I guess I would say I try not to spend too much time thinking about what could have been. But it is an interesting question to think about. And I'm sure I could talk about it for another 20 minutes. But
well, it's interesting because we live in a strange world now, where people are famous just for being famous. It used to be, in the long ago, you actually had to be a performer or a sports star, an actor, a musician, something, and that is where you got your fame, broadcaster. But now you can be famous for just being famous. And it's
for being like a social media star or something like that, you know.
And and what it's created is a generation of people who, when you say, what do you want to do? They will tell you they want to be famous, but they don't know for what. When it comes to your profession, theater, music, is it one of those things that is just a passion? Obviously, you want to make a career, you want to be paid for it, but is it something you'd do for free if you had to?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you ask that because it's, yeah, I think that the beauty of what I do, you know, is, and I'm trying to think about the best way to answer that question, because I don't know that I would necessarily do it for free, although I've sung for people for free. You do it a lot because sometimes the best payment for what I can do is just to get a laugh out of somebody or get somebody to cry or you know, something like that, an emotional reaction to music, because that's what art is all about, is how we affect people and how we can inspire people with what we do. But I definitely think that, like, I agree with you about you can be famous without really, you know, you get so many people on all these social media sites that are just famous for recording videos in their you know, bedroom, and they're really good at editing and adding music into it and stuff like that. And it's kind of interesting how the world has evolved like that. You know, fame in this business is... it's a tricky thing because it's kind of like one of the guys that's in the production that I'm working on right now here in Shreveport is a pretty famous singer, you know, when it comes to just the word fame. Like, he sings all over the country, all over the world, you know, and his name is, he goes by the name of Michael Mays. He's a very famous baritone. But he told us, like, he shared with us that you spend a lot of time in this career being very lonely. You're on the road all the time. You're traveling. You know, I was talking to a great friend yesterday, and I was like, it's weird to think that in the last 4 months, I have been to Houston, I've been to New York, I've been to Chicago, I've been to Cincinnati, you know, I've been to Ohio, up to Ohio to see family and friends for the holidays. Now I'm back in Louisiana. I've just been all over the country, and I've done most of it by myself. You spend a lot of time alone. So it's interesting, people think like fame and doing something where people know your name and your face is a very, you know, you're surrounded by people, but you're actually, you spend a lot of time alone in this career, and you spend a lot of time on by yourself and honing your craft. And I don't know, I guess it's another one I could meander on and on about with the answer, but you know, I hope that kind of answered your question.
Yeah, yeah, it's a very interesting world we live in. Now, you went to Otterbein, Ohio State. How did that help with your growth as a performer?
Well, I will always have love. I'll start with Otterbein. Because Ohio State could be a whole separate conversation. Otterbein was a school that, when I was coming out of high school, I knew at that point that I wanted to be a musician. And I knew that I wanted to get into the musical world. I didn't know if I wanted to perform necessarily. I thought maybe I would become a music educator or teach or do something like that. But Otterbein kind of stuck out of all the other schools that I applied to and auditioned for. They offered me the most scholarship money, which anybody will tell you that's more important than just about anything else. But I also found a wonderful voice teacher there, and a woman by the name of Dr. Gail Walker, who runs the choral program there, is one of the most fascinating, wonderful people I've ever worked for. And you know, they just mentored me and taught me and showed me the ropes. And it's such a wonderful little university. Westerville is such a wonderful community. And I grew so much as a singer those 4 years. But I always knew that I wanted to go to Ohio State. And I wanted to be a Buckeye. I've always been a Buckeye at heart. Most people in Ohio, I'm kind of preaching to the choir probably. And most of us consider ourselves to be Buckeyes, even if we didn't go to school there. But, yeah, I just, I grew so much as a singer, so many teachers, so many mentors, so many names that I could mention along that path. But they taught me pretty much everything that I know and set me up to kind of go out into the world and apply my craft and what they taught me.
For people out there listening right now, how do you define what you do? What is your job description?
Oh man, that's a question that I should have written out and thought about before I came into this interview, because that's interesting. You know, we call ourselves, I'm a singer, I'm a performer, but I think it's more than that. Any job that I take, you know, I'm working for Shreveport Opera in Shreveport, Louisiana, and I've become a member of the community down here. You know, my title for a job is I'm a professional opera singer. But we can also, you know, I mean, we go out and do all kinds of events in the community. We perform at schools. We hold talks and talk to kids about what it takes to do what we do and the path that you have to follow and some of the sacrifices you have to make. You know, we just do all kinds of things. I can also teach voice lessons. You know, my knowledge about voice and from the people that I've studied with is, you know, not to toot my own horn, but I mean, it's immense when you go through 6 years of study and a master's degree and all these things, you learn so much, and then you get out in the world and experience, you know, different, some of the amazing singers that I've worked with. You just learn so much about your voice, your body, and what you have to do to be at the top of your game. So I don't know. That's a tough question. I'm a professional opera singer. That's what I call myself on most of my resumes and things that I put out there. So I guess that's what I consider myself.
Now, singing opera, for anybody who's ever been to an opera, is completely different than going to a concert, pop, country, whatever it might be. What do you have to have? What set of skills do you have to have voice-wise to be an opera singer?
Well, I think that every style of music requires a little bit different, you know, honing. And with opera, I always say, and there's a lot of people out there, I'm sure, that disagree, opera is like the most pure, you know, the most healthy singing that you can do at the purest level. You know, opera is literally, some people will tell you have to do this, you have to do that. I always think of opera as just you open your mouth and you sing. Because, you know, some of these other styles like musical theater today, there's a lot of, you know, the technique of belting. I'm sure I'm talking about things that people just have never heard of before. But a lot of these styles are, you know, can cause unhealthy things to happen for your voice. And there's a lot of opera singers that can sing into their 60s, into their 70s, because the goal to be an opera singer is to keep your voice as healthy and pure and sing on the muscles as much as you can, and use your breath support. And I think that's the biggest difference in styles. I'm not saying it's the best style, because I don't really listen outside of working. I don't listen to a lot of opera. I listen to rock and roll. I listen to, you know, pop music, alternative music. I'm a big fan of all kinds of different styles. And I also like to go to some karaoke sometimes and just have fun and take the wheels off. Mm. And I also think there's other singers and other styles that, you know, have more fun than me, because opera, singing opera, has come to the point where, like, it's work. You know, when I think of listening to an opera or watching an opera or singing opera, I am evaluating it and being like, could I sing that? Could I not sing that? What are they doing that's different than what I do? You know, it's a whole thing, man. It's just something, another one of those questions that I could spend a whole interview talking about that.
Well, when you come from a place and you go out, you become successful, you're living in a different place, and then you come home, mm-hmm. and you did that, in 2019 and 2021 to sing the Messiah here in Marion. What was that like?
It's a wonderful experience to bring the things that I've gone out into the world and learn and come home and see, especially this last performance, you know, in just this last December, I sang the Messiah at Epworth Baptist Church. Or is it Epworth Methodist Church? I don't remember. I don't live in Marion anymore. But I sang at Epworth is where they hold the event. And the amount of faces, the people that I grew up with, grew up around, grew up being taught by, that you sing for, it almost takes you back to, like, you feel like the kid that lived in Marion again, you know? It's like you revert back to remembering all the times that you had with these people, all the lessons that they taught you. And I love it. I love coming back home and sharing. It's something that I want to continue doing as I get older. You know, the more I build myself up in this career, the more successful I get. I would love to find ways to get involved with my hometown, because a lot of people don't realize that, you know, that aren't from Marion. Marion has a fantastic arts community. I have always been impressed that, like, most of the schools in Marion, if not all of them, not just Marion Harding, but, like, the county schools, everybody, they do musicals, they perform shows at least once a year. The Palace Theater, which has long been run by Claire Cook and her daughter, puts out just incredible musicals every year. There's lots of concert events. You know, there's just so much good music and arts in Marion. And to be able to come back home and share, you know, what I've gone out in the world professionally and done, I just find it to be an important thing, you know, to not forget where you came from.
Tell us about some companies you've worked for.
Well, the first company that I ever left Ohio to go work for was a company in Chicago called Chicago Summer Opera. That was kind of my first time really getting out of the state. And then one of the most beloved companies who I've now worked for twice is out in Central City, Colorado, which is just west of Denver. They're called the Central City Opera. And I've done a number of things out there for them. And the conductor there, the guy that runs their music, is actually also conducting the show that I'm doing right now. But I'll get to that in a moment. But yeah, Central City is one of the finest, you know, companies for young singers. And I've had the pleasure to work out there twice. I've been employed for the last 2 years down here in Shreveport, Louisiana, with Shreveport Opera. And while they're a small regional company, they do great stuff, great repertoire, and they've put a lot of young singers in positions to succeed in this business. You know, and you get a lot of opportunities at a smaller company like this that you don't get at some of the bigger ones if you go work for the bigger ones. And then this summer, I'm going out to work for Santa Fe Opera, which is, they kind of title themselves as the premier opera company for young singers. It is the top summer festival program in the United States at this point in time. So it's kind of a big, you know, I'm 27, about to turn 28. That's kind of a big stepping stone point in my life and career to get hired by a company like that. And I'm singing bigger and bigger roles each and every year. And I just try to take it all in stride, you know, because it's like you dream of these things when, and we've talked today so much about, like, when you were in high school, when you were in college. You think so much about, like, man, I would love to do this someday. I would love to sing these roles. I would love to work for these companies. It's a little weird to be living in the moment where, like, I feel like I'm still dreaming of what I want to do 5 years from now. And yet I sit here and live in the moment. I'm like, man, I'm achieving dreams that I set years ago.
What does it take to make it to that level, to get into Santa Fe?
Well, this is a question that could apply to just about anything that anybody does, any passion that they have, whether it come back to sports, whether you want to be a great engineer. I think it takes number one, I always say it takes making sacrifices. You know, anything that you have a passion about and you want to build a successful career in, sometimes you have to put yourself and your craft and what you're doing first and foremost. And you have to just sacrifice relationships sometimes. You know, I was always somebody that wanted to get married, settle down, buy a house, and have a big family. And, you know, that's not something that I've come remotely close to yet. And that's a sacrifice that I've had to make. I think that you have to, sometimes you have to be really good at advocating for yourself, and you have to put yourselves in, you have to put yourself in positions where you're willing to do what it takes to step above what somebody else is doing. And I don't like to use the term like, you know, push somebody else out of the way in order to get yourself. But I mean, sometimes you have to shine above them in order to get the job, because you're going to compete against people. And it's a very competitive industry, this business is. You know, there's only a select amount of positions and jobs with these high-level companies. And, you know, if you're not employed by them, you're very quickly going to find that it's very hard to make a career. I think those are the biggest things that you have to do. But I also think on a more positive, less aggressive note, you have to have passion for what you're doing. And we've talked a lot today about, you know, the passion for music, the passion for art. It is not always the product that an audience sees when they come to the final product, the show that is staged, costumed, lighted, full orchestra. You know, that it's such a grand thing. It's so beautiful, so many colors. You know, this beautiful music and you know, people dancing and moving on stage. There is a lot of not so grand things that come into the creative process of that, you know, long rehearsal days. You know, the air conditioning might break and then it's hot. You know, there's just tons of things that go into doing it. And I'm sure anybody that works a job and has a career going can say, yeah, it's the same in our industry. There's a lot of crap you have to go through to get to the point where you want to be, you know?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because when you are in the performing arts, or really in any field, could be sports, could be broadcasting, could be acting, if you are aggressive, because there are so few parts, so few openings, a lot of people will say you're egotistical. How do you get around that?
Yeah, that's a tough question, Scott. That's a good question, not a tough question, a good question. That is definitely in this business. That's a big thing. If you're uber aggressive in the wrong way, you can really get labeled as, I mean, you can get blackballed by companies. You can get labeled as a problem, as trouble, as somebody that people don't want to work with. You have to, it's so interesting, because like I've talked to some of my younger students about ego before. You have to believe that you are good. And not only do you have to believe you're good, you have to believe that you're the best every day. When you walk into an audition room, when you walk into, you know, the rehearsal hall, you know, when you walk into any music rehearsal, whatever you can think of, you have to believe, I am the best at this, and that is why I have this job. And I'm going to walk into this room, and I'm going to be the best that I can be today. But you have to show love and compassion towards your coworkers. And, you know, one of the coolest things I was ever told, you know, one of the conductors I've worked for before, he did a coaching with me. You know, I worked with him one-on-one. And we got into a discussion about, like, you know, because this guy has conducted, like, everywhere. He's conducted in Europe. He's conducted all over the United States. He's conducted some of the best singers in the country. I mean, he's worked with so many big names. And you would think that he's got, like, this pretentious air about him. No, he looked me straight in the face and said, I don't want to hire somebody because they think they're the greatest thing ever. I want to hire somebody who, when work is over, I can go have a beer with them. And I can sit down and talk about the ball game last night with them. And I can, you know, we can just talk about life. I don't want somebody who's going to suck up to me and strut their stuff all the time. Because if you're good and you know you're good, you don't have to necessarily do that all the time. It's just like an inner confidence that people know you're good. They know that you know you're good, but they know that you're like also a good person and good to work with. I hope that all kind of made sense in the end.
You know, it's very interesting. You talked about having to sacrifice a family that you did want so far in your life because of this career. Mm-hmm. Why can't you have it all?
Well, I mean, there are plenty of singers that do, but a lot of times it takes more time than you think. You know, it's harder to, gosh, I mean, I remember my grandparents and most of the people in your life, you think that you like to start having kids and, building families in your mid to late 20s, in some cases earlier, but that's when you'd like to do it. Why can't, I don't know. I think it's just the amount of time that you're on the road. I mean, literally, I explained earlier, like my last 4 months, think about, you know, how many different cities I've been in, how many different places I've been to. And right now, you know, I've been in Shreveport. Our spring contract started on January 2nd, and I've been here since then. But next month, I'll be moving back to Ohio for a little while to see some family, and then I'll be going to Santa Fe for 3 months, and then I'll be back in Louisiana again after that. So there's just, you go all over the place, and you travel a lot. And, you know, someday I'd love to live in Europe and work in Europe. And I think that, you know, when it comes down to it, there's still kind of the kind of nuclear family kind of mindset in most people of, like, in order to build a family and a life with somebody, you have to get a 9-to-5, be settled down, you know, and be living and working in the same town all the time. Because it makes raising kids a lot easier. I mean, stuff like that. It makes owning a home a lot easier because you and your prospective partner or whatever are both responsible for, you know, being there together and working through those problems. But I'm going into, you know, that's a lot of conjecture on my part. It's you can make it work, and lots of people have. It's very tough. It's very tough to build foundations with people when you're only in their life for 3 or 4 months at a time, and then you have to move on to another place and be thousands of miles away, you know?
Do you think down the road that this didn't happen, that it could become a regret?
Definitely. Yeah, I think so. You know, I'm a very passionate person. I apply that to my art and my craft and what I do in work every single day. And I think that would also be something that I would love to turn into a relationship and a marriage and fatherhood someday. You know, I feel like I could teach a lot of good things and raise children. And if I never get the opportunity to do that, you know, that sounds bad to some people, but it's something I've thought about, because if I keep getting bigger and bigger in this career and traveling more, you know, there's always a chance that it could hit a point of, like, even if I do find love and relationship and a marriage, I could be at a point in life where it's like, well, we really don't want to have kids anymore. You know, we're such and such years old, and it's just going to get harder and harder to raise kids. I would say that it could become maybe a regret, but then I try not to regret things, because at the end of the day, there's always something else that, for everything that you regret, there could be something that you're thankful for that you have in your life. And I try to live with that kind of mindset, you know?
If you could write the future right now, what would it be?
Scott, you're a good interviewer, man. You're asking me some tough questions here. I would say that I live kind of on a 5-year basis. 5 years ago when I was 20, 22, 23, I said that I wanted to be working all over the country for opera companies and singing roles. That's where I am. So I'm very thankful for that. 5 years from now, I would love to have an agent. I would love to be represented by somebody helping me get contracts. I would love to be working for opera houses all over the country. I would also love to be teaching some students at that point and developing younger voices and the future talent that will come into this business or, you know, apply their musical crafts in other ways. I would love to be doing that as well. I want to have a successful career. I don't want to be the most famous singer that's ever lived. I don't want to be Pavarotti necessarily. I don't want to have my name plastered on every documentary, you know, about music 40 or 50 years from now. But I just want to, I want to sing all over the world, and I want to, you know, inspire people with what I do. And I hope that if there's anything that anybody that was listening to this today, that you can come from anywhere and do this, you know, because most people that I talk to anywhere else I go, they've never even heard of Marion, Ohio before, you know, but I came from Marion and I'm singing in some of the greatest opera companies in the United States. And I think that's pretty cool personally.
You know, I think people are curious and not I'm not looking for a figure here, but when you do what you do, mm-hmm. expenses, being on the road, so on and so forth, is it a monetarily successful field at this point?
Well, where I am at this point, it's I'm growing in terms of monetary, and that's one of the reasons people quit and drop out of this career. You know, I always say that opera and being in the arts is a battle of attrition. Whoever stays in it the longest will be the most successful, because you spend a lot of years of your life in this career not making a lot of money. And that's what comes back to, you know, you asked earlier, would you do this for free? I think that's the better question, is that, you know, would you sacrifice not necessarily being, you know, I have people that are my age, 27, 28, that are already making like, you know, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year, and they have 401ks, and they're very, very comfortable. You're never going to get to that point in opera until probably you get into your 30s, you know, unless you are some kind of prodigy or sensation or something like that. Those are the exceptions. But you're going to have to sacrifice for a lot of years and live paycheck to paycheck and be very, you know, save a lot of money and be very careful. But I am very, very close to kind of breaking things open a little bit here as I get into my later 20s. And there is definitely an avenue that I can see where I will be a lot more comfortable monetarily. Guys like who I was talking about earlier, the guy who I'm singing with in the production we're doing right now, he does very well. He does very well. And he's just been doing it for such a long time. And you get to the point where your contracts get a lot better, a lot bigger, and yeah, money gets a lot more comfortable as you go.
Dylan, with about 30 seconds left here, what's coming up for you? I know we've talked about it, but you will be back in Marion. Any performances here?
Well, nothing on the radar in Marion at this time. I would love to come back and sing the Messiah again next December, you know, if they'll have me. That's always something that I really, really enjoy doing. I enjoy being able to come back to the community and be involved at that capacity. But I'm also just, you know, I'm ready to come home in April and May and see family and friends. That's what I'm more focused on. Take a little break after kind of the busy spring I've been having.
Absolutely.
Scott, I want to thank you so much for having me on today, man. This has been a lot of fun.
No, it's blown by. It's been a lot of fun. Dylan Davis, 2013 graduate of Harding High School, son of Eric and Darlene Davis of Marion here. You probably remember Eric from the Marion Star for so many years, and I'm glad he put us in touch with each other, because it's good to catch up and let the listeners hear of somebody who's doing well, opera performer at this point. Dylan, thank you so much. Best of luck, and check in with us from time to time.
Absolutely, Scott. Thank you so much. I hope you guys weather the rainy weather that you're having there and have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you, Dylan. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Bye.
Dylan Davis. There you go. Somebody from Marion making good. Judge Joe Brown and a lot of topics in about 15 minutes. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place. To legendary attorney and representative of clients such as O.J. Simpson and Dr. Sam Shepard, F. Lee Bailey.
Let's talk about that. The day the verdict came back, Dr. Shepard had been in prison over a decade at that point.
No, he was out on bail by then.
Oh, he was out on bail.